chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, COPD, it's not just a difficult diagnosis, is it? It's actually the third leading cause of death worldwide.
That's right. A huge impact.
But what I find really striking and, you know, terrifying for patients are those sudden worsenings, the acute exacerbations.
Exactly. They're not just bad days. They're serious events.
Right. They can really push the disease forward, often leading to hospital visits, long-term damage. It's critical.
And interestingly, it's especially critical for those with milder COPD. While exacerbations are tough for everyone, some studies suggest they cause, well, potentially more relative lung function decline in mild to moderate patients than in severe ones.
Really? That's counterintuitive.
It is a bit. So it raises this huge question. If stopping these flare-ups early on is so vital, what tools do we actually have, especially for that massive group, maybe over 90% in some places, who aren't yet in the severe stages?
Which brings us perfectly to our deep dive today. We're looking at a recent big clinical trial. It focuses on carbocysteine.
A drug we already know can help in severe COPD.
Precisely. So our mission here is to unpack what this new research tells us about its effect on patients with mild to moderate COPD. Does this... Well, this familiar medication offers the same kind of help when symptoms are less severe. Let's get into it. Okay, so first things first. Carbocysteine. What is it, fundamentally?
Well, at its heart, it's what we call a mucolytic agent.
Mucolytic, meaning?
Meaning it helps deal with mucus. Think of it like a tool that helps thin out and loosen that thick, sticky stuff that often clogs up airways in conditions like COPD.
Ah, okay. So it makes it easier to cough up sputum, clear things out.
Exactly. That's the primary idea, improving sputum clearance.
But you mentioned earlier it's maybe not quite that simple. There's more to it.
That's right. And this is what makes carbocysteine quite interesting from a research perspective. Beyond just, you know, breaking down mucus, it seems to have other properties.
Like what?
Well, studies suggest it has free radical scavenging abilities, sort of like an antioxidant, and also anti-inflammatory effects.
Okay, so multiple actions.
Yes, this multifaceted action is why it got a lot of attention, especially after big studies, like the PEACE trial, showed it could cut down exacerbations and improve symptoms, but specifically in patients with severe to very severe COPD.
Right, which left that big question mark hanging, didn't it?
It really did. What about everyone else, the millions with mild or moderate disease? And that's exactly the gap this new trial aimed to fill.
Okay, let's talk about how they did it. Sure. To really trust the results, we need to know the study was solid, right? What was the setup?
Absolutely. This was what's called a phase 4 multicenter double-blind randomized placebo-controlled parallel group trial.
Whoa, okay, that's a mouthful. Let's break that down a bit for, you know, for us non-statisticians.
Oh, right. Well, multi-center just means it happened at multiple hospitals, 14 in this case, across mainland China. Helps get a broader patient base.
Okay.
Randomized means patients were assigned by chance, like flipping a coin, to get either carbocysteine or a placebo.
The placebo being?
A dummy pill. Looks identical, but it has no active medicine. This helps avoid bias.
Got it. And double-blind.
That's key. It means neither the patients taking the pills nor the doctors treating them knew who was getting the real drug and who was getting the placebo.
Ah, so it prevents expectations from influencing the result.
Exactly. And parallel group just means the two groups were followed alongside each other for the study duration. So all those terms together tell you this was designed to be, well, about as rigorous and unbiased as you can get in clinical research. It's the gold standard, really.
And who were the participants? What were the criteria?
They recruited adults aged 40 to 80, all with a confirmed diagnosis of mild to moderate COPD. They also had to meet specific lung function targets.
Lung function. You mean like FEV1?
Yes, precisely. They needed a post-bronchodilator, FEV1, of 50% or more of their predicted normal value.
Okay, let's pause there. FEV1. Forced expiratory volume in 1 second. Can you quickly remind us what that measures and why a post-bronchodilator matters?
Sure. FEV1 is simply how much air you can forcefully blow out in the first second. It's a standard measure of how obstructed your airways are.
Makes sense.
And post-bronchodilator means they measure it after you've taken a reliever medication, something that opens the airways as much as possible. This gives a better sense of the underlying fixed obstruction rather than just temporary tightness. It helps classify the COPD severity more accurately.
Got it. So these were people with confirmed but not severe obstruction. What else do we know about them?
Well, the average age was around 64. Mm. It was predominantly male, which is something to note. And crucially, many had quite mild symptoms when they started.
How mild?
For instance, about three-quarters, 76.8%, had actually not had any exacerbations in the year before the study. And almost the same number, 74.4%, had its CGA score below 10.
CGSCAR score, remind us.
Right, the COPD assessment test. It's a questionnaire patients fill out about how COPD affects their daily life. Cough, phlegm, breathlessness, activity levels. A score under 10 generally indicates, well, pretty low symptom burden, low impact on quality of life.
So definitely a milder group overall than in, say, the PEACE study.
Oh, significantly milder, yes.
Yeah. Okay, so these participants took either carbocysteine 500 milligrams three times a day, right?
Yes, 1,500 milligram total daily dose, or the placebo.
For how long?
For 48 weeks, so nearly a full year.
And what were the researchers measuring? What were the main goals, the primary outcomes?
They had two key things they were looking at. First, the annual rate of COPD exacerbations, basically.
Mm-hmm.
How often did patients experience flare-ups over the year?
Okay.
And second, they wanted to see if there was a difference in lung function, specifically that FEV1 measure, but this time measured before using a bronchodilator. They compared the change from the start of the study to the end, after 48 weeks.
Right, but there was a hitch with the numbers, wasn't there? Something about the pandemic.
Yes, that's a really important point for interpreting the results. They initially calculated they needed about 732 patients to have enough statistical power, especially for the lung function outcome.
But they didn't get that many.
No. Recruitment was slower than expected and eventually stopped early, primarily due to the COVID-19 pandemic. They ended up with 539 patients completing the study.
So what did that mean for the outcomes?
Well, they stated that this sample size was sufficient to assess the exacerbation rate, which was one primary goal, but it was not sufficient, it was underpowered, for properly evaluating the effect on lung function, the other primary goal.
Okay, that's crucial context, definitely something to keep in mind when we look at the findings. All right, the moment of truth. They set up this rigorous trial, recruited these mild to moderate patients. What did they actually find after 48 weeks? Did carbocysteine deliver?
Well, let's start with the exacerbations, that first primary outcome.
Yeah.
The results showed essentially no significant difference between the two groups.
There's no difference, really.
Statistically speaking, no. The annualized rate of total exacerbations was 0.39 per patient year in the carbocysteine group and 0.46 in the placebo group. The p-value was 0.273.
Okay, p-value 0.273. For our listeners, what does that practically mean? Higher is less significant.
Exactly. Generally, in medical research, you're looking for a p-value below 0.05 to say a result is statistically significant, meaning it's unlikely to be just due to random chance. A value like 0.273 suggests that the small difference they saw between the groups could easily just be noise, not a real effect of the drug.
So, no clear win for carbocysteine on reducing overall flare-ups. What about moderate or severe ones?
Same story, unfortunately. No significant difference there either.
Okay, so outcome one, not what they hoped for. What about outcome two, lung function? Acknowledging the power issue, of course.
Right. For lung function, that pre-bronchodilator FEV1, again, no significant difference emerged. The average change from baseline was tiny in both groups. 46 milliliter improvement with carbocysteine, 49 milliliters with placebo.
Practically identical.
Pretty much. The mean difference was just 4 milliliters, and the p-value was very high, 0.827. And as we discussed, the authors themselves were clear. Because they didn't reach their target sample size, the efficacy on lung function could not be adequately evaluated.
So they just didn't have enough data to say for sure either way on that one.
Precisely. The study lacked the power to detect a potential difference if one existed.
Okay, so efficacy-wise, not looking great for the specific patient group. But what about safety? Any concerns there?
Now that's actually a positive point from the study.
Mm-hmm.
The drug seems very safe.
How so?
The rates of adverse events, side effects, basically were very similar between the groups. About 18% in the carbocysteine group experienced one, versus just under 16% in the placebo group.
That sounds pretty close.
It is. And importantly, serious adverse events were also comparable. So the conclusion from the safety data was quite clear. Carbocysteine was very well tolerated.
Okay, so safe. But based on this trial, maybe not effective for reducing exacerbations or clearly improving lung function in this mild to moderate population.
That appears to be the main conclusion regarding efficacy, yes.
So what does this really mean? How do we interpret this? The big takeaway seems to be that carbocysteine, which we know helps in severe COPD, might not offer the same benefits for exacerbations in milder disease. And its effect on lung function here is, well, uncertain, this feels like a shift, doesn't it?
It does. And when you connect it to the bigger picture, it really underscores a critical point.
Yeah.
Disease severity likely matters a lot.
How so?
Think back to studies like PEACE. They showed benefits, yes, but in patients with moderate to severe COPD. Those individuals often have much more significant issues with mucus, thicker mucus, more of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a major driver of their symptoms and exacerbations.
Okay.
Now compare that to the patients in this trial. Much milder disease. Most hadn't had exacerbations recently, low symptom scores. In these individuals, maybe mucus isn't the main problem causing flare-ups.
I see. So the drug targets mucus, but if mucus isn't the primary driver of exacerbations in mild disease, then the drug won't have much impact on exacerbations.
That's likely the explanation. COPD exacerbations are complex events, right? They can be triggered by infections, inflammation, even airway muscle spasms.
Mm.
In severe disease, thick mucus might play a huge role in making things worse, blocking airways, trapping bacteria.
Makes sense.
But in milder cases, maybe those other factors, inflammation, infection, are more dominant, and the mucus component is less critical. So a drug that primarily targets mucus, even one with some anti-inflammatory effects, might just not be hitting the main issue hard enough in these patients.
That's fascinating. So it's not that the drug fails, but maybe it's just not the right tool for this specific job in this specific patient group. It's more about targeted application.
Exactly that. It suggests that for mild to moderate COPD, we might need different strategies, perhaps focusing more directly on inflammation or preventing infections, rather than relying solely on a mucolytic approach to prevent exacerbations.
What about those other factors, though? The pandemic, other meds, could they have skewed the results?
The researchers did look into that quite carefully. On COVID-19, yes, it affected recruitment, leading to that power issue for lung function. But they point out that 95% of the participants were actually enrolled before the pandemic really hit hard.
Oh, okay.
And the exacerbation rate they saw in the placebo group was pretty much what you'd expect based on historical data for mild to moderate COPD. Plus, because it was double-blind, any pandemic effect would likely hit both groups similarly, so it probably didn't bias the comparison between carbocysteine and placebo.
And other COPD medications. People were likely taking inhalers and things.
Yes, standard COPD care continued. But the protocol managed this, and the analysis statistically adjusted for any differences in baseline medication use between the groups. So it's unlikely that other meds confounded the main findings about carbocysteine itself.
So it really does seem to boil down to two main things. The study being underpowered for the lung function outcome and the fact that this specific milder patient population might just not benefit from this mechanism in the same way severe patients do.
I think that sums it up well. And maybe a third point, the initial sample size calculation might have been a bit optimistic about how large an effect carbocysteine would have in this milder group.
Right. And we should also mention the population studied, shouldn't we? Predominantly Chinese males.
Absolutely. That's an important limitation for generalizability. We don't know for sure if these findings would hold true in, say, female populations or patients of different ethnicities or different healthcare settings. It highlights the need for more research in diverse groups.
Okay. So stepping back, this deep dive really shows us something important about medicine, doesn't it? A drug's effect isn't always straightforward. It's not just, yes, it works or no, it doesn't.
Not at all. It's often highly dependent on context. The stage of the disease, the specific characteristics of the patient, the underlying mechanisms driving the illness at that point. It's all interconnected.
What works wonders in a severe condition might just not hit the mark in a milder form of the very same illness.
Precisely. And that's not a failure of research. It's a refinement of our understanding. It pushes us towards more personalized medicine, thinking critically about matching the right treatment to the right patient at the right time. One size definitely doesn't fit all here.
So the bottom line seems to be carbocysteine, still a potentially useful tool in the COPD toolbox, especially it seems for those with more moderate to severe disease where mucus is a bigger problem.
Yes, based on the evidence we have so far.
But for patients with mild to moderate COPD, particularly those without frequent exacerbations or major mucus symptoms, this trial suggests carbocysteine might not be the key to preventing those flare-ups. The drivers might lie elsewhere.
That seems to be the message. It's valuable information helping us understand the complexities of COPD better and guiding where future research efforts should focus for early intervention. Knowing what doesn't work for a specific group is crucial progress.
Absolutely. So For you, our listener, maybe grappling with a mild to moderate COPD diagnosis, or knowing someone who is, here's something to ponder. If simply targeting mucus isn't the primary answer for preventing exacerbations in the early stages, where should the focus shift? What other approaches might hold more promise for stopping those damaging flare-ups before they happen?